Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. And here is your host, Ryan Mack.
Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. Now, ACH has certainly seen a lot of growth this year, but on today's episode, I wanted to take a deeper dive into the subscription and charity verticals to explore the benefits that ACH can deliver, not only from the merchant or organization's end, but from the consumer's perspective as well. And to be honest, the data that we discussed today is very interesting. So to unpack the data and deliver some key insights on this subject, I have Brad Smith, who's not just Senior Director for Industry Engagement, and Sarah Grotta, who is Mercator Advisor Group's Director of Debit and Alternative Products Advisory Service. So there's certainly a lot of interesting insights to take away from today's episode. So without any further delays, let's start the show. So Brad and Sarah, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode. Now, I think that we're all familiar with the use of ACH payments, like large B2B transactions in payroll, direct deposit. But I think we want to take a little bit deeper dive and talk about today some of the other vertical markets where ACH is also really growing quickly. Specifically, I really want to focus on donation payments and payments for healthcare, and then also subscription payments. So Brad, if I could start with you. I understand that using ACH for making charitable payments has some benefits. Could you tell us how this is good for the charity or nonprofit and the person making the donation?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, thanks. We've done a great deal of work in this nonprofit space. We've been building relationships with churches, the church industry, nonprofits, charities. We've been to nonprofit conferences, just spreading the word about ACH. And there are quite a few reasons why ACH is good for charities as well as the consumer. ACH donations, those that make ACH donations or donations by ACH, make an average of about 8.2 donations over a 12-month period. If you compare that to other payment types, checks and card, they only make 3.5 donations over a 12-month period. What we've also found in our research is that those that donate by ACH give more than double over a 12-month period than those with other payment types. So the average donation over the course of a year for ACH donors is about $1,700. And those that use other payment types over that same 12-month period is about $650. Now, what nonprofits look for, right? What their goal is sustaining donors. They want those donors that will give month after month after month after month. Now, they will take, you know, the one-time donation. That's not a problem. But their goal is sustaining donors. So what we have found is that those, again, that donate by ACH, 71% authorize automatic recurring payments out of their checking account. Those that use other payment types, they only do the setting of a schedule 9% of the time. So I think that when you can get into the consumer's checking account and become part of their regular bill payment, right? What comes out of your checking account, right? Your mortgage, your rent, your car payment, your student loan, your electric bill, your credit card bill comes out of that. These are things you have to pay every month. So I think getting into the checking account makes that donation part of their monthly bills and something that is near and dear to them. And the last thing that we found that is a big bonus and it helps ring true with the donors themselves, the consumers, is that because of the inherently lower fees and costs associated with ACH payments versus others, more of that donation goes towards the cause. So I think those are kind of the big things for the charities and for the consumers.
You know, one question I had for you, Brad, on that is there a benefit to using a checking account number for these donation payments versus, say, a card number, just because consumers tend to hang on to their checking accounts longer and card numbers tend to change from time to time. So from a processing perspective, it might make for, you know, less operating procedural aspects to these transactions, particularly for recurring transactions, if that checking account is the account for the transaction.
Yeah, Sarah, the you know, as you know, we all have debit cards or credit cards in our pocket or our purse or wherever. Those cards have expiration dates. And so there's a expiration date, right, for those cards. And most people don't really change their checking account. For me, I've had the same account for since like 1994. But I recently did have to get a new account, but that's once every, you know, 20 whatever years. So I think that is another thing. If that card has expired, that charity has to contact the consumer. And then the consumer has to actually make a decision whether or not they want to continue with that payment or not. So I think that's a huge benefit, is that the checking account really doesn't go away.
Yeah, I certainly think that, you know, that's really interesting from just kind of a consumer behavior mindset thing. I certainly understand from kind of a somewhat of a kind of, you could say, kind of a frictionless experience, right? Because I think when consumers decide that, hey, yes, I want to make a donation to a charity, I think more often it is that they're really kind of looking at it as that, yes, I'd rather just have this set it up once and then have it kind of enact as though it's a subscription payment on my end. You know, you certainly, you feel good when you're able to donate to the charities that you want to on that end. And I think it's, I certainly think from a consumer standpoint, there certainly are large benefits to just kind of being able to set it and forget it, so to speak, on that end. So I certainly think that's really interesting in terms of just the numbers that you're seeing from kind of the benefit of setting up that ACH payment there. But now, Brad, some of our listeners may not be aware that ACH plays a big role in healthcare claim payments, which is certainly a very large topic right now, considering everything that's going on. And this really means that those payments made by insurance companies to service providers and doctors, could you maybe kind of tell us a little bit more about that process and how all of that process works?
Sure. We think that ACH is confusing. I've been involved with this healthcare industry for a couple of years, and their claims process for, you know, doctor visits and x-rays and that kind of thing, that is more complex than anything that I've seen in a long time. But we started working with CAQH, which is the Council for Affordable Quality Healthcare, back in 2010. They are the rules owners for this healthcare claims process. And they needed some assistance with the actual payment portion of that healthcare claim. So they reached out to us and we worked with them very closely and we still do. In 2013, the Department of Health and Human Services declared that the CCD, and in the ACH world, the CCD is the corporate credit or debit. So the healthcare EFTs must be a CCD. So using the ACH network as a corporate credit or debit to make those payments. So that helped the healthcare industry a great deal. And we've seen tremendous growth in those payments since 2013. So again, and like you said, Ryan, these are payments that are going from the insurance company to your doctor, or your insurance company to the x-ray company, or whatever, at the hospital, whatever it might be. We saw in 2019 about 343 million payments made in that healthcare space. That's about $1.7 billion. Where we have some work to do is that's only 70% of all healthcare claim payments being made by ACH. So there's still 30% of the healthcare claims that are being made by other payment types, which is typically going to be check. We've seen some of the virtual credit cards inch into this space as well, but they're still by check. The real work that we have to do and the dental industry has to do is get more usage of ACH for their claims payments. They're under the same healthcare claim process as CAQH, and they go through the same thing with getting paid by insurance companies. But the dental industry only has 13% of their claims payments made by ACH. So we've done a lot of work this year with the American Dental Association. We've done case studies with dentists themselves and their practices that have been touting the benefits of ACH for those payments.
So the reason for implementing these transactions on ACH is really trying to create some efficiencies in the healthcare industry. Do I have that correct? I mean, I know that there's been a mandate, I think, through the Affordable Healthcare Act that we needed to create not only efficiency in the delivery of healthcare itself, but also in the payment process. So is that really what sort of perpetrating the need to move to ACH?
Absolutely. Yeah, the ACA was a big driver in this, and they've done a lot of work over the years to make the claims process more streamlined from an information perspective, as well as the payment perspective, because the check payments are very slow, and ACH allows those payments to go much more quickly.
You know, one other thing that maybe you can kind of bring up here a little bit, Brad, and we could kind of discuss a little bit. I really kind of do look at it, though, as like the ACH, you know, you kind of brought up in terms of just the complexity of just the payments, and especially the payments in when it comes to healthcare claim payments here. But I almost kind of really view it as that it's ACH itself, in my mind, is somewhat simple in the fact that it goes, okay, I need instructions of what the payment is and who it is going to, and then at the end of the day also needs to have the who is going to be receiving it and their information to it. So it's kind of a, if I have both ends of the data, the payment itself is pretty easy to process at that point. It's kind of a, okay, go from point A to point B, and here's the data that's there. Do you really kind of feel that that the payments industry as a whole, as we're kind of able to have access to more of the data and kind of more of that data silos is really breaking down, that's really where we're able to see that, hey, that ACH really can be extremely beneficial and really efficient in that process, because now there is that data that's accessible. So therefore, it makes the payment or makes the claim a lot easier to get from point A to point B. But curious to get your thoughts on that.
Absolutely. The doctor's offices or the hospitals or the dentists can go online and sign up through each individual health plan to receive these EFTs. And once that happens, then they get that payment much more easily, because they are providing that payment information to those insurance companies. And that makes the payment that much easier, right? So they're going to get that ACH in 1 or 2 days after the payment, the claim is settled. As opposed to, say, through a check that still has to get mailed and then handled in the back office of the doctor's office or the dentist's office, and then taken to the bank or scanned in the back office or whatever they do to get that payment done. So having that information on file allows for those payments to occur more efficiently and quickly.
Now, Sarah, I'd like to start with you here on kind of this third topic of subscription payments, because I know that Mercator Advisor Group really has this fantastic chart that's taking a look at subscription payments. And I was wondering, perhaps maybe you could unpack this chart for our audience and really kind of pull out some of the key highlights. And just as a reminder for our audience who are following along on paymentjournal.com, you're going to be able to view this chart in the article below. So Sarah, if you could perhaps unpack this chart for us.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, subscription payments have been kind of a hot topic within the payments market for about, you know, I'm going to say 4 to 5 years. We've seen, you know, some pretty significant growth. And so, you know, we've spent some time through some of our surveys asking consumers about subscription payments. And so we have this chart where we look to define the types of purchases that consumers are making through a subscription service. And we kind of break it into two segments. So on one side of this chart, we're looking at what we call box of the month club. So those are things like the regular purchase of meal kits or food items or home goods, health and beauty items, things like that. And then we also measure media purchases. So this includes video and music streaming and software subscriptions and things like that. So within these two groups, we're finding that 23% of consumers have a subscription to a Box of the Month club, so nearly a quarter of the population, and close to 60% have a subscription to some sort of media service. So if you think about that, that's a lot of payments. And think too that when we did conduct this survey, we did do this sort of pre-COVID-19 or pre-impacts of COVID-19. So I suspect that consumers are actually spending through consumer payments for subscriptions have shifted a bit as their needs have changed, but certainly the demand is still growing. And on the payment side of subscription payments, you know, it can be a little bit involved for the merchant. You know, it's not just about payment processing, but also about disclosures for recurring transactions and communications. And you'll find that there are a number of software solutions available to merchants to help them to manage these recurring transactions. And that also means setting up the payment. And oftentimes, I think all of these software providers are providing some help to consumers and to the merchants as well to set up and process ACH transactions.
I've been involved in the subscription industry for not quite a year, and I'm amazed at the growth I've seen over the past year. And I'm amazed at the variety of products that are available for you to get on a monthly basis. And I, you know, like you said, Sarah, like we're familiar with the Netflix and the Apple Music and the Spotify and those streaming things. I don't think that's really new. But these other ones, the Box of the Month Club, you know, there's for clothes and food and wine and beer, you know, they're more of a niche thing, but they're still growing at an amazing pace. And they do have to pay attention to the payments. And they do have the assistance of those subscription platforms that can set up their website and their the payment processing and how the website looks and their shopping cart and that kind of thing. And those are necessary because some of these subscription companies are like smaller businesses and they want to work on growing the subscriptions and not worry about, you know, the back office stuff. So I think they're very, very important to this. So by allowing consumers to use ACH for these recurring monthly subscription payments, I think this subscription industry can see a lot of the same benefits as the donations in the nonprofit industry, like we talked about a little bit earlier. Looking at some of the data that I've acquired over the last year or so, there's a company called ProfitWell, and they do subscription metrics. And in the subscription industry, 20 to 40% of their overall churn is based or because of delinquency. Now, churn is the regular losing and acquisition of customers over, you know, a certain period. So a lot of that churn based on delinquency is because of expired cards. And we talked about that just a few minutes ago as well. And companies recover less than one third of those delinquencies. So when that card is expired, it requires the subscription company to contact, call the customer to get the new number. And if they only get one third of those back, that's a good loss of business. As I've said, and I know making a connection from nonprofits to subscription seems kind of weird, but it's still an ACH recurring payment, regardless of what the industry is. And like I said earlier, ACH tend to give more and give longer than other payment types. So here's a subscription industry looking for that sustaining subscriber, right? Like a sustaining donor. They want them to give longer or pay longer as just like they do in the nonprofit space. So again, by paying out of their checking account, that subscription becomes just like their electric bill, becomes just like their mortgage, and it becomes part of their own little payments ecosystem. So I think that the ACH has a big place and can be a big portion of the payment in the subscription industry. It's not there yet. Right now, because of the nature of subscriptions, I think it's very card-based. And I don't put down the use of the card in this. Like, initial acquisition by card is probably good because you know nothing about the consumer. Here they are looking for you to send them a product. You want guarantee of that payment. You want to make sure that the card is good, et cetera. So that's great for primary initial acquisition. But I think if you want to retain those customers long term, I think converting them to ACH is a pretty great way to do that.
Yeah, Brad, I certainly think that you know you make a lot of great valid points there in terms of just also the data that really speaks to it, right? You know, I think we kind of, you know, you pointed out in terms of it's a little weird, so to speak, of saying, you know, charity subscription, but at the end of the day, that's really what it is. It's a reoccurring payment that's happening. So whether you want to call it a charity donation or a subscription to that charity is really kind of just in the name at that point there. But I think the data that you brought forward is certainly very very telling in terms of just consumer behaviors and how it is that they psychologically kind of process some of these things. And then also in terms of just the whole, hey, your checking account, usually a lot of people don't change checking accounts very often, but your cards themselves may expire. So I certainly think that there's a huge benefit in terms of the ACH to that. So certainly I think that this is a very interesting topic here. But for now, Brad, Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time today for speaking to me about ACH payments and the different merchant and the different verticals that we're talking about here today. And I hope to have both of you back on the podcast real soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.